You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 136, Moana, Let the Man Tears Flow.
For all the links and information about this and any other episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast, check out rotoscopers.com. It's the community and the one-stop shop for all things in the animation world. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast. Woo! We are the Rotoscopers. My name is Chelsea Robson. Welcome. This is the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. We are excited to have you here today. My name is Chelsea Robson once again. I already said that, but hey, we just keep going. And today I have two amazing co-pilots on this flight to the North or to the South Pacific. We got the one and only roto writer, Pablo Ruiz.
Say hi, everyone.
And newcomer to the show, Ryan Pareto.
Here I am. This is the sound of one man peaking in life, because it's all downhill from here.
See, Ryan, Ryan's put in some great, great voicemails in the past, and I just thought he would be a great addition to our show today. So are we excited or what?
I'm excited.
Yes. It's my first Disney podcast.
That's right. See, yep. Pablo is normally the guy who we bring on for all the Pixar stuff. But everybody knows, if they know Pablo, that Pablo is well-versed in all his Disney facts. I mean, his favorite Disney movie. What is your favorite Disney movie, Pablo?
Well, Anastasia doesn't even count. It's so good, right?
You're right.
Like, they're so good. All of them. Lion King, Tangled. That's probably my two. Like, traditional animation and CGI. That's my favorite, probably.
Awesome. Well, yeah. So we're glad to have you on this Disney podcast. Yay.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
So this is how today is going to go. If this is your very first time that you are joining us. Basically, we normally have my other two co-hosts is Morgan Stradling and Mason Smith. They are both off for personal reasons. Congratulations once again to Morgan, who just had baby Graham. So she's taking some time off with that one. And so it's just, we're really excited for her. And then Mason also has a bunch of personal things that he's got going on as far as school and whatnot. So we're giving him some space. But we miss him. We miss both of them so much. But we are going to have a great time today. So basically, the Animation Addicts Podcast is really just a group of friends who get together, talk about a random or a new animated film that maybe just came out or that came out long ago. And we do a lot of rants. We do a lot of just random, like, sit on the couch and just nerd out. I mean, everybody's got to have their thing that they nerd out on. This is ours. So, and next, the thing is, because this is Ryan's first time on the podcast, we have something of a tradition that we do with all the newcomers. This is called Catch and Fire.
Well then, how about a quick round of Catch and Fire?
Catch and Fire? You mean me?
You're the only one with enough courage.
Ryan, you know what Catch and Fire is, right?
Oh, yes, the hazing process. Yeah, I do.
I can see, like, that fear in his eyes. Like, oh. So basically, in order for everybody else to get to know the new people on the show, we do what is called Catch and Fire, which is a quote off of one of my favorite films. See, this is the Swan Princess. Yeah. There you go. There you go. I was telling them earlier that it's like sometimes when you go live, you're just like, oh, wow, that is blank right there. But no,
it's
the Swan Princess. So Catch and Fire. And so what it is, it's a bunch of rapid fire questions that I'm going to be asking Ryan. And he's going to be basically saying the very first thing that comes to his mind. And this is how you all get to know him. So are you ready?
I am ready.
I'm so excited.
All right. What is the first animated movie you remember seeing?
What's the one with Littlefoot? The Neverending Story. No, what's the one with Littlefoot?
Land Before Time.
Yeah. That trauma.
Favorite cartoon growing up?
Rugrats, definitely.
Okay. Favorite animated movie?
I mean, I don't like to pick favorites. But I will
Rapid fire, Ryan.
Wally.
Okay. Who's your favorite animator slash artist?
I will have to say, not to any part, but John Lasseter, he has turned some things around for Disney, and I have to give him some props over that.
All right. So are you going for classic animation or CGI?
I very recently have gone to CGI.
Really?
I have been converted. I'm one of the converted.
Okay. Okay.
Pablo's angry.
What is your favorite animation studio? This is no judging, Pablo.
Pixar. As of
now. All right. Are you going to go for Laika or Studio Ghibli?
Oh, which, if they're hanging off a cliff, I'd have to save Laika.
Okay. Are we going to go for Disneyland or Disney World?
Go Disneyland.
Okay. Heroes or villains?
Heroes.
All right. Mickey, Donald, or Goofy?
I am very partial to the love child of Walt Disney, so Mickey.
Okay. Let's see. What was another funny one? Favorite obscure animated character?
I adore Hey Hey right now, and that is the first thing that popped in my head. So,
okay. He will be very obscure for for a while.
Yeah.
Songs or no songs in animated films?
Oh, man. I have to go songs because I wouldn't want to live without them.
There you go. All right. Now, and this is the most important and final question. Which would you rather watch? Return of Jafar or Norm of the North?
Oh, it's like that question got easier over the years because it is so Jafar.
It's true. It's true. Well, before it was. Okay, here. How about this one? Hunchback 2 or Cinderella 2?
I would go for Cinderella because they are pretty mean to that boy just because he's a little bit under the rating barrier there.
Oh, man. All of those are a horrible fate.
Yeah.
But everyone, say yay! Ryan passed.
I made it.
Yay! You did it.
You made it through. It's hard.
52 out of 52! Well done!
All right. Well, today, for everybody who has been waiting so patiently, we are going to be talking about the one, the only, the newest Disney animated film, Moana.
We're very excited.
Being alive with the sky needs to see, it calls me, and no one knows how far it goes. If the wind is my sail on the sea stays behind me, one day I'll know. If I go, there's just no telling.
So first, from Box Office Mojo, IMDb, Wikipedia, and all those other fun, you know, internet sites. The studio is Walt Disney Animation Studios. It was directed, well, at least the major directors were Ron Clements and John Musker, sorry. There were two other co-directors with that as well, but those are the main two that kind of set the standard, I guess. Release date was November 23rd, 2016. The budget was estimated at about $150 million. And the box office opening weekend, so this is just, it came out a little less than 2 weeks ago, right? So opening weekend, it slayed The Fantastic Beasts, the new Harry Potter film, and it brought in about $56.6 million domestically. And then Box Office Mojo saying that at the time of this recording, it is about $89.5 million domestic and over $100 million worldwide. For your first week in business, not too shabby.
Doing well.
Doing quite well. That's really good. I know. I don't know. Do you guys think that it will take the place of Frozen as far as, because I've heard a lot of people say it's better than Frozen.
No,
I don't compare the two, but yeah, I've heard some people, oh my gosh, I liked it better than Frozen.
I can see that, but I don't think it will outgross Frozen in the box office. Yeah. Like, that was just
I would have to agree with Pablo there, because that thing hit at just the right moment. It had just the right songs. It, during the season, it's very winter-oriented. I don't think that could ever... It will be eventually, because raising ticket prices. But that is just... Even though it's not a perfect film, it hit in the perfect way.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, I'm seeing Moana tomorrow for the third time, and I only saw Frozen in theaters two times, so...
Well, there you go.
Okay, if you supplement all of Pablo's ticket prices, it might crack that.
I will make the difference.
Pablo will make sure. I'm sure Disney thanks you for that, Pablo. Yep.
I hope so. I'm very loyal.
Yeah, right. Well, going into this film, what are some of the thoughts and feelings that you had about it? So we'll start with Pablo.
Well, I went into the movie with very high expectations because the trailers looked beautiful. The music was by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who I adore and admire. And by the time I went, I had been listening to the soundtrack for a couple of days on a constant loop. And I was like, this is going to be amazing. And then I'm happy to say it met all those expectations.
How about you, Ryan?
I, like Pablo, went in there with some lofty expectations. Lin-Manuel, first off, there wasn't one more thing they could add to get me excited for this. It was Lin-Manuel. And I know he wasn't the only one to work on it, but I was, after In the Heights, after Hamilton, I was so jazzed about the score. I was so jazzed about what he would create vocally.
And he really does bring a total different aspect. His style
He's so playful with his rhythm. He's so playful with his rhyming. And for like a songwriter, you can totally hear his voice and not just literally, but you could hear his methodology of writing songs in the songs. And so if you enjoy his work already, you're going to have a great time. But
yes.
I'm now in my older age, I'm very much tied to the Polynesian Islands. I'm very much tied to Hawaii. And so they so perfectly picked a topic that I was related to. And I was like, oh, my gosh, they're sharing this culture I'm already in love with. And like now that I'm tied to these islands, I get that there's a part of it that will share with the world. And so when it started coming out, I adored seeing every little trailer, every little thing. And then as soon as the soundtrack, well, actually, Pablo, props to him. And I used the Amazon Rotoscoper thing. I purchased the soundtrack after it, and then I watched the movie because I wanted to go in very clean about it. And I was blown away by everything. And all in all, my expectations were met, if not exceeded.
Nice, for sure.
What about you, Chelsea?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, so because of the Rotoscopers, I've had a long history with this one. Not quite as long as what we'd had with Frozen. If you remember anything about our Frozen days, we were extremely... active.
We worked hard on that.
And we, because of our activity levels on that film, we also had a lot of people were coming at us and like giving us information about other films. And now this is like things that people that didn't work for the studio, but that somehow along the way ended up with information and they like wanted to give us this information. And so I thought it would be interesting to go through a couple of the plot points that were prior to this. Are you guys excited?
That sounds super interesting.
So prior to their, you know, excursions and research, they had a lot of different changes that were made because of that. The story itself, it seems to be pretty similar. Obviously, it's Polynesian islands and a lot of wayfaring and wayfaring. Is that the right word? I believe so.
Wayfinding.
Wayfinding. Wayfaring, whatever. So they had, I'll go through. First off, she had 6 older brothers.
Oh, wow.
So that is something that was changed very quickly. And her personality was kind of that of like what Anna from Frozen, her personality, which is like very like chipper and just kind of quirky. And, you know, so you look at her personality, which is still kind of the same, but I believe that her voice actress brought a different level for sure than what Kristen Bell brought to Anna. Yeah. But she would talk really, really fast. And she was also like a super nerd and knew everything about Maui. And this was something that she was like, I know everything. One of those people that I know this and I know that. And
like us.
Yeah. She's basically like us. And her dad's dream was to restore the navigation and the wayfinding culture to the islands, because prior to him is when they went away. And then so that was his dream. And then the mother, she had been, or at least wanted to be, a navigator herself when she was young, but then put those dreams aside when she wanted to raise a family. So she knows that Moana wanted to be a navigator, and so she was all pro for it. But at the same time, it was kind of like you can go and do what I never got to do type of thing. While her dad still had a bit of the attitude of, no, I don't think so. I'm just going to be, you're not going to get on a boat. It's just for the boys type of a thing. She had 6 older brothers, but we only knew really anything about 2 of them. One is the oldest brother, and he was like this old teddy bear type. And he was just very like the nicest big brother ever, and believed in her dreams. And it was probably something to where like he would be the one out there trying to help her and being like, you can do it, you know? But then another brother, I'm not sure if it was a younger brother, but I'm not sure if it was the youngest brother or the next younger brother. He was like the antagonist with her, like socially in her family, like always teasing, always trying to poke and prod and just like get under her nerves, get under her skin. So that was where that all came from. Oh, the pig was still in this film. The pig belonged to the eldest brother. So the big teddy bear type guy.
Very adorable pig.
Right.
Didn't survive too much in the actual movie, because that was the one thing. I was like, false advertising. Where's Pua?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's kind of, I think he had a lot more to do with the original film than he did in the end. But, you know, whatever. It worked out.
He's a survivor from previous drafts.
Right. Hey Hey was there as well. Hey Hey was a chicken that, instead of being just a dumb chicken, like he was not dumb. Like he was kind of there and kind of one of those, you know, kind of like an Abu type thing, okay. I guess. And then Maui, he was obviously in there, but he didn't really change. And then you had a couple other demigods, Moki Moki, who was also in there. He's the one out of the coconut shells. But his personality was totally different. He was like this insecure chatterbox, kind of a gossip, kind of one of those other sidekicks, I guess, to Maui, as opposed to, you know, where they actually came and you see him on the boat and come after him. So that's an interesting little change. And then Te Po, which is the island demigod, she was there, but she was a lot more of the antagonist. Like she was kind of more angry at the fact that, I mean, she kind of was, in her dual version of herself. But she was the more, she was like actively an antagonist. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And then let's see what else. Oh yeah. So the dad and the brothers, they go on this navigational trip and they end up getting lost. And to save them, that is how Moana sets out on her own and runs into Maui along the way in order to save her brothers. So that was one of those differences. So they also, another difference is when they were first starting this, I know that I just remember when we were all like so excited, oh, because Ron and John had this secret project that they weren't telling anybody about. If you go back to some of our earlier episodes, you'll be able to see, hear us talking about that. But they actually, there was talk about them doing a little bit of a Paper Man type feel with the art with this, which can we just take a moment to think about how cool that would have been?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for a whole movie with that look.
Yeah. Oh, man, that would be so great. So those are some of the basic information. And at that time, this was before they moved it up. At that time, they actually weren't going to let it out until 2018. So that was, it was a long time in the box, but then it got moved up and moved around. And so I'm glad it came out now instead of 2018. That would have been sad.
Yes. But.
I totally love hearing about that kind of stuff because it takes such courage to stop what you're already going on, rewrite, reformat. I mean, I know Brave was very similar in that. I know Pixar, but how they had to rewrite a whole portion of it. I know WALL-E too. It was like they already had entire animated sections that they completely cut out. And to hear like how stories develop is always very interesting. Although you probably just ruined a greater portion of the DVD extras.
Even Zootopia, right? Zootopia was about Nick at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Like 2 years ago, they changed that. That's a huge change. And it turned out so well. So good.
It really did. And those are the, I thought that was super interesting. But also going in, letting you know that that's a very long answer to your very short question of what were my first thoughts going into this film. I had known all of that information prior, and I just decided after that point that I wasn't going to get into it as much as I had with other movies because I really did want to come into this a little more clean. But I did, when I did go into this, it was beautiful. I mean, I had high expectations for sure. With all the names connected to it and everything. But I guess I still try to go into most movies just kind of like a even keeled, I guess, just in hoping that it'll, you know, raise me up even more. So that's my question. But I just thought it was so interesting. I like how you said that it does take so much guts to go back and change all of that. So like I said, this was probably all prior to their research trip, which can I just say, holy moly? That was a lot of research that they went in for this.
Like I was reading about it, and it's so interesting how much research they did, all the people they talked to, all the islands they visited. And I absolutely fell in love with that culture. Like I had no connections to it really, but now I'm like doing research every day. I think that's really good. Like during one of the interviews I was reading, I read a quote by Clements. He was talking to an elder on the island of Mo'orea, and the elder said, like, for years we have been swallowed by your culture. This one time, can you be swallowed by ours? And I think they totally did. Like, you can just feel every frame of the movie is just, like, full of the culture, full of the energy of those people, and I just loved it so much.
Oh, yeah. And when you're just talking about, to the same point, echoing some of your same points, how there was so much respect they put in to researching. They had that little council made of people, make sure they get every little part right and respectful. And when people show that kind of thing, it's a tricky business when you're appropriating an entire culture, because you run the risk of it being insensitive in some areas. But I think they did the best that you could have. And I'm sure it wasn't too bad that they had to research places like Hawaii and other beautiful Polynesian islands. I imagine, right. Why don't we put our film in someplace we want to vacation?
Right. Every time I hear about research, I just remember Lee Ankrich talking about Toy Story 3. And he's like, well, the people in Ratatouille went to Paris and had dinner in a bunch of five-star restaurants. The people in Up went to like Venezuela, to the Tepuy. We went to a garbage dump.
Yeah. So,
oh, man. Yes. Fantastic. I thought it was really cool how what they ended up doing is they had a group of people that were called the Trust. Basically, it was just this group of people that were experts in something that had to do with Polynesian culture, in dance, in music, in culture, as far as like different islands, at universities, language. And they had this trust of people that they would always go back to anytime that they would make any major changes or even small changes too. They would always go to them and say, hey, how can we make this better? How can we make this more, more authentic? And I thought that was super cool. Cause I mean, there is a risk that you have when you are relying too much on facts, I guess. So there is something to that. Why it would be kind of dangerous, but at the same, as far as like storytelling wise, but I do think that they played the game well enough because of the fact that it is just it's a make-believe story anyway, just based in a yeah. real place.
Yeah. So, I think they did that perfectly, like balance the real with the fiction, because mm-hmm. it is a movie. Like when yeah. things are based on real stories and stuff, and people complain that they're different than real life, it's like, it's a movie. You have to change it to make it dramatic. But I felt this movie was the perfect example of like, do all the research you can, like make sure every frame has like a detail that is true. And it shows like you can just feel that they know what they're talking about, but mm-hmm. they still had fun and they did what was best for the story.
Yeah. I thought so too. One other cool thing that I thought was awesome is they actually did an entire movie where the animation and everything was timed to the Fijian language. So the entire language was used, and the movie itself was in Fijian, which that's so expensive to do.
That's so interesting.
I thought that was super awesome. And I know that they really appreciated that, because now that they have, that was one of the requests that they had, is like, hey, can you do this so that we can kind of perpetuate our own culture within our own people and have something that our kids can be super excited about? That's also going to be in their language, so that the language itself can be excited for people to speak yeah. it.
I did not know that. That's great.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that excites me about animation, because I think more so than any other medium in entertainment, animation allows you to approach certain things and make them approachable. And I don't mm-hmm. know why that is, but you're able to do that. And sometimes it's not used. Like the way this could have gone bad was, I always think of like Song of the South. Disney, back in the day, tried his very hardest to talk with black authors and screenplay writers and whatever industries were at the time. And he was trying to make it as culturally sensitive as it was, but this is the way to do it right, where you make sure it
we
is.
We all know how that turned yeah. out.
Oh, poor Song of the South.
Yeah. But yeah, this was perfect. And what a gorgeous movie, visually oh, yeah. speaking, too.
Yeah.
You could get lost in Moana's hair.
Yeah. Oh, the hair. What about the hair?
I'm going to go frame by frame when I get the Blu-ray of that, just to say, wow.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
There were so many sequences I loved, like when she walks into the ocean as a kid. And she sees like all the fish and the turtle. And I was like, wow, this is astonishing. This is amazing.
How far we've come from 2D animation where it looks photorealistic. And I know like you're in a water-based movie. You're going to want that. Just thinking about how much of the movie is surrounded by water. They had to make it look amazing. And that's probably the best showcase of it. Also, when she first meets Maui and she like gets catapulted through the water. But yeah.
Well, the water itself was probably the hardest character because it was not only the atmosphere and of an integral part of the film, but it also was a character itself. So it had to, you know, look and move like a sock puppet to be able to like respond to her. I thought that was super cool. Very neat.
And it shows how much effort they had to put into that. Because if that was me, I would just like throw the rock out every so often. That's it. You don't need that extra stuff.
I can just imagine going back in time like 10 years and being like, hey, let's make a movie like just set in the ocean about like two people with long hair. And they'd be like, no, what are you saying?
Yeah.
And now who knows what we'll do what we'll be getting from Disney in 10 years.
You just go through the timeline of movies that have come out. Like you go to Toy Story 1 and then to Toy Story 2 and you see that jump where it's crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Or the last, might get me some haters right now, but the last movie that Pixar produced that looked like they were still plastic was, I think, Monsters, Inc. And you go back, and that movie looks crazy low quality compared to today's standards.
Yeah, especially to Monsters University. You're like, here's how the medium has evolved.
Did you guys even try on that first one? Because it seems... Yeah.
So good.
Well, okay. Let's just get it out of the way. What is our favorite thing about this movie?
The music.
The music.
Yes.
Just right away.
Oh my, let's just get it out of the way. Let's start it off. All right. So, were you guys were all knew about Hamilton or, you know, had known about Lin-Manuel. What were some of your going in just speaking of him?
Well, I discovered Hamilton, I think earlier this year, around January. And then until like March, I didn't hear any other music. It was just Hamilton in a loop. And then I started hearing In the Heights and then it was that. In a loop for a while. I absolutely fell in love with this guy who is an absolute genius, in my opinion. And then I was researching on him, obviously, because I was like, what else has he done? And then I was like, oh, he's the one doing the music for Moana. What? I'm even more excited for that movie now. Because when I first researched Moana, I was like, okay, music by Lin-Manuel, I don't know who that is. But then it was just so exciting when I realized he was doing the music for a Disney movie. And then the more I researched, the more I realized that he loves Disney as much as we do.
Yeah.
Like in my soundtrack review, I included a quote from him where he's like, when Under the Sea starts playing in The Little Mermaid, my life changed. And he says that that movie is the reason he got into musical theater. And his son's name is Sebastian, in part because of Sebastian from The Little Mermaid, which is amazing.
That's awesome.
And I just loved it.
That is really cool.
I was just watching the movie, and then the first song started, and I was like, I'm seeing a new Disney movie, and this is a new song. I'm so excited. It's so great.
Yeah, so I always thought it was kind of interesting how, like, in Frozen, they were doing with... Robert and Kristen Anderson Lopez. Yep. And I was like really interested the fact that they switched over to, because everybody was thinking that he would go in and I was thinking that he would be the one to do Moana as well, but obviously that wasn't the case. And then they told that he's going to be doing Gigantic, which is coming out later. But I was very interested in to see the style differences, because there, I don't think there really there is anybody out there like Lin-Manuel Miranda, just because of how he, like, you, I love how you were saying earlier, you can really hear him, not just like his voice, like actual literal voice, but his writing style. His style is like, yes, this is him. And like, it's just, I find that really refreshing to be able to have, to know your style so well that people just know it's you. And that's something that is just really cool. So I thought it was, first going into, I was like, what's the difference going to be? You know, but obviously it's going to be a very different film with Lin-Manuel Miranda in there.
Yeah. I remember hearing the soundtrack for the first time. I had seen that little clip from your Welcome Day release, and I already knew it by heart. But then I heard the song, and then when Maui starts like rapping, I was like, oh my God, Lin-Manuel, yeah. I love you even more now.
I was much the same as you guys, again echoing what you guys say, but when he did a Grammy performance for In the Heights, and that's where my first introduction to Lin-Manuel, and then I saw the White House performance of what would become the opening number to Hamilton, and I when Hamilton's CD came out, that's been in the car, that's been on my iPod, that's been in everything, rotating it. And when I found out he was going to be writing the music for Moana, I was thrilled. Not unlike now, I'm so hyped for him. I'm like excited for the Little Mermaid remake, and I do not like remakes, but I'm so excited for that now.
Well, I'm also the Mary Poppins sequel. Oh, I was like, what a terrible idea. Lin-Manuel Miranda is in it. Oh, I'm in.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Oh.
Here's my money.
What a terrible idea.
He needs to be. Disney needs. They are so lucky, because I know he got the part before Hamilton even came out. The popularity of Hamilton had not yet hit. And they were able to integrate him in with everything that's coming through, and his love. You could tell he loves, in all the internet videos on YouTube, you could tell he loves what he's doing. And that is so fantastic to see. Because, and like Pablo was saying, you could hear some of the same rapping patterns he has that are so equivalent to someone like Biggie or Nas in hip hop. And back to the soundtrack that Pablo sold to me. There's some outtakes, some amazing outtakes.
Oh, so and, good.
And hip hop versions of the songs on the thing. And some of the audio is raw. Some of the songs are actual songs that didn't even actually make it in to the movie. And you see why, like, the narrative evolved and they had to cut stuff out when you're listening to it. But it is amazing to listen to. I almost think one of the songs will be just as popular. And when I heard You're Welcome, I would know it will never hit the height of Let It Go. But when Your Welcome came out, I was like, Disney has it. Disney has the ability to take a song, and they either take a colloquialism or just a common phrase, and they create a song around it, and then that becomes the bane of parents' existence until that movie loses popularity.
And of my friends, too.
Yeah. How often does that get... It can't come up as often as Let It Go, because that's like a big... sarcastic Let It Go, but You're Welcome, how snarky and sarcastic even that is, like, that's so perfect. And I adore Lin-Manuel, and I will follow that guy to the end.
Oh, me too. I'm just hoping that he makes a Disney princess musical where the princess is Latina. Like, that's my lifelong dream. And now they have him, like, he's involved with Disney, so please just make it happen.
You need to take Awali'i and Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Lin-Manuel and just throw them in the Disney vault and see what they create. You are not allowed to leave.
Please do that.
And actually, that's to your point of Aladdin Princess. Another part of my huge culture is my Hispanic heritage, and that's why I'm so excited for Coco and Pixar, because it's animation lets you share these parts of your culture with the world and makes them seem approachable. And I love that.
You know how the rumors that is a musical? If that's true, I would explode.
Oh, be still my aching heart. If they
Pixar doing a musical.
Yeah,
he has the guitar. He has the guitar in that promo art. I don't even want to think about that.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Oh my. Well, yep. Here's some of the, okay, so we've talked a little bit about You're Welcome. And that's the thing is, as I was watching this movie for the first time, I was going through and I was like, I knew that the song, How Far I'll Go, I knew that was in there. Because every time that she sang it, I was like, oh, I like this song. This is a great song. But I, like, the moment that You're Welcome came on, I couldn't remember it at all.
Yeah.
I was like, no, You're Welcome is just so beyond words catchy that you just, you have a hard time singing anything else. But that being said, later on the next morning and for like the next week, every single day, I woke up singing How Far I'll Go. And it was just like, man, that's one of those songs that just gets under your skin. You're like,
little
you don't
earworm.
You don't really know it right away, but they put it in there enough that you're like, I'm in. I got this. And
I know
I'll
exactly what you mean.
This.
Because at first I was just like, you're welcome. And I was like, I'm going to learn the words to this. And it will be hard because of the rapping, but I will do it. And by now I have it. But I just kept waking up, or when I got distracted, I started singing How Far I'll Go. And I was like, oh, it's more special than I thought. And in the movie, I loved it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I really loved when they first started it out, and the very first song was Where You Are. Is I thought that one was just okay. So I just watched Trolls, and in Trolls, the very first opening musical, this is a musical song. It just felt very shoehorned in there, like square peg, like round peg in a square hole, or vice versa, whatever. And I just felt like that one didn't work, but this one was so. It just came together so perfectly. And I just thought, wow, this is a great opening song. And just everybody is just so pretty. And they did a really great job of making you see, no, she wants to go out there, but they want her to stay where you are. So I just thought that was, I loved that song.
And it does so much. Like it introduces the island, the grandmother, Moana's desire to explore, her parents being like, no, stay here. It just does so much. I mean, it's also so catchy. Like I find myself singing that one too. I really like that one. I really like all of them.
It also does a really good setup for showing the interconnectedness of the islands and stuff. I know there's a really good quote about the ocean does not separate our islands, it connects them. And that interconnectedness of the first opening number of like, oh, we need the banana leaves. They cook our meat. We make our baskets with them. We whatever. And that is so fantastic. And sorry to harp on Lin-Manuel Miranda, but his themes and his lyrics are going throughout both of his big productions. And you hear something at the beginning that doesn't like show up to the very end, but it's like, he set that up. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing.
I see what you did there.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
512 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Oh, yeah. That was a great song. And then what's next after that one? Is it How Far You'll Go? Yeah. I thought Auli Cravallo did a wonderful job. Like, I loved her acting in the whole movie, but her voice is so beautiful when she sings. Oh, and yeah. I think she nailed it for this song.
I was really impressed with her technique. And I'll just say that. I was like, dang, girl, you're good.
Coming from Chelsea, that's a top-tier compliment.
Oh, you got like, that good.
You just turned 16?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of makes you think what you were accomplishing at 16.
Like, oh, I've wasted my life. Well, and then We Know the Way, which was
so
Lin-Manuel. Lin-Manuel coming in. And I love his voice is cool. Like, it's not one that's like,
it's not spectacular, but
it's not a spectacular voice. No, but it's got such character. that you're just, it works on, and he makes it work, you know, he makes it work for him. And
visually, that song is so beautiful. Like when we see them wayfinding and we see that they were explorers, and Moana, you already know Moana, so you know what this means to her. I was so excited.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was a little bit sad that Lin-Manuel was like a Phil Collins figure, where like he sings but he doesn't voice a character. But you know, maybe in my Latina princess musical dream, he can voice someone.
They'll do an animated version of him in there. That'd be awesome.
Maybe
Philippa Sue was in there though. The his wife in Hamilton. She was one of the voice actress. So
yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the additional voices. I was like, just give her a role.
Yeah.
She's a Liza.
It doesn't have to be about Moana.
So awesome. Can we just get an animated Hamilton, please?
Yeah.
That would be really cool, actually. Well, okay, how about Shiny? I think that's been the one that's been the most, like...
divisive.
I'm not sure.
I love it.
I would say... Let's start with Pablo.
Okay,
I'm excited to hear it.
Pablo goes with a yes. Go. Let's hear it.
I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
In fact, it's probably my favorite scene in the movie. Like, I think Tamatoa steals the show away. When he's like, are you just trying to get to talk to me about myself? Because if you are, I will. In song form. And my friend and I just looked at each other like, this is special. And as soon as the movie ended, my friend turned to me and she was like, that crab was amazing. Such a good commentary on the entertainment industry and how they're like, I'm so shiny. And I was like, that's genius.
It's funny.
Oh, it's so good. And it's Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords and the Muppets and everything.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it took me a while to realize who it was, but now I love it even more.
Yeah.
That makes so much more sense right now.
It's amazing.
Like,
they made
the
such
whole
a good
attitude
choice.
That he does. Yeah. I'm like, yes. That is Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah. My friend and I just text each other lyrics from the song all the time. Like, I will sparkle like a wealthy woman's neck. So good. So good.
Okay.
Oh, so what about
Ryan?
You?
Ryan,
Okay. I'm of two minds. One, the scene, a slight negative at first. It seems like when you start singing, it should be on the opposite side of a smash cut. Like, a la Family Guy. Like, wouldn't it be funny if the crab was, like, really glam?
Yeah.
And then it just hit. But I adored the song. As soon as he started speaking, I was like, it's Jemaine! And then that comment when he's all, pick an eye, babe. Just pick it. That was my biggest laugh moment. Even just the entrance when Maui jumps down and goes, I'm still falling.
Yeah, yeah.
So good.
Don't worry, it's a lot deeper than it looks. But when he started singing, it's like, it is a glam rock thing. And then I later found out it was like a Lin-Manuel's genius tribute to David Bowie. And when you hear that, when you go back and you hear that, that is so David Bowie's method of like song. And Jemaine, if you guys watch the show Fly the Conchords that is themed around their song, there's that one scene where Jemaine does the David Bowie through the years. He dresses up like David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust. And it's like, that could not be a more perfect choice of voice actor.
Yeah.
I'm totally for that one. Yeah, now that I'm going into it. Well, okay. For me, it was a negative at the beginning because I got into and I felt like it was going along. And then it just like totally took a strange turn.
Yeah.
Like it was just a very totally different vibe, totally different rhythm of film. Like it was just strange. And it's growing on me, though, like after now, especially knowing that Flight of the Conchords in there, I was just like, yes, I can get behind this now. But it's. It at first it was just kind of like, what did I just watch? I don't know.
I also I, mean, I was I was very creeped out when he like knocks the lights off and then it's just like all black light. I was
the
like
bioluminescence. That's a good line too.
Yeah.
Spooky.
Oh, she coated a rock in bioluminescence in order to work as a distraction.
Crush it.
Yeah.
That's so good.
I love the coloring in the realm of monsters though. Yeah. I mean, the saturation was so thick, but so awesome. I just feel like that could have been another reason why I was kind of like, this is just so different because of the whole art style. Everything about the movie changed just for Shiny.
Yeah.
So I think that might have had a lot to do with my like not warming up to it right away. But like as I'm saying, like afterward, I was and listening to the song on its own. I love the song on its own. I think it's great.
Yeah.
So good.
So and then we've got I Am Moana.
That was my number one emotional moment. I'm gonna throw it after Pablo because I got some stuff to say about this. But you go ahead, Pablo.
Well, the soundtrack came out on the Friday before the movie, I think. So I was like on my way to school, and I was like, I'm listening to Moana, obviously. And I got to that song, and when she like screams, "I am Moana," I just started crying. And I was like, "I hope no one is seeing me," because. And then I realized that every day I listen to the Harry Potter audiobooks, and then I cry too. So people must be used to it. But I was super emotional just listening to the song without context, and then in the movie it was even more so.
Yeah.
It was just so beautiful the way it starts with like her grandmother getting there in like manta ray form. Everything, just all the tears.
Bring on the waterworks.
So,
Chelsea, right? Wait, no, I think Chelsea, again, I got some stuff to say about this song. So how about you go?
I apparently don't have as much stuff. I'd rather hear yours. Okay. I mean, mine is like all around good vibes, but I don't have like stuff to say. So okay. Go.
I was so irritated pre this song because this animation, one of my only gripes with this movie. So I was like, okay, you're gonna leave, and then my brain already knows he's gonna be back for no good reason in the next scene. Like, but that song saved that part of the movie because I would have been so irritable with that. And it's just like I Am She-Ra moment where she's like, Moana is a character that is strong, that she doesn't even outright go against what's on the island. It's not like she's trying to escape this horrible thing that her life in the kingdom. She's actually quite good, and they show that. And when she's talking to her grandmother, when the manta ray comes out of the ocean and her grandmother's right there, and it's like Pablo, I cry. I would even argue I cry easier than Pablo. And I started going then. And then you see, because it starts off with the grandmother, and she's like, I know a girl who, you know, loves her island and stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is totally communicating who this girl is. And in song form, I Am Moana, it ends with I Am Moana. And it has like, she found her strength. And then she dives into the water and gets the heart of Tahiti. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. And you're trying. At that point, I'm like sobbing. But, you know, you try to hide it, but everybody sees those tear heaves. And there's kids next to me, and I know they know what I'm doing. Like, mom, why is this kid crying like this? But I got over it. And yes, so scene saver, beautiful song, completely communicated what the movie was about.
Yeah. So good.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Oh, good times. And then the final song, Know Who You Are. Good one. None of us have the same amount of stories as with the
Yeah, it's good. Good.
Yeah. Oh, so as far as characters go, like we had the major characters, we got Moana, of course, and then you've got Maui, and you've got Grandma, and then the dad, but those are kind of the major ones. You know, you don't really have more than those three.
There's only like really five characters. You look at IMDb and they have a short cast list. They really made it.
Even the credits surprised me because the credits started and it was like cast list, six names, and then that was it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But
I love Moana.
Oh,
just such an adventurer. a true Gryffindor, as I told my friend when we saw the movie.
Oh, really? So are you the type that has to put everything into houses?
Well, right now.
He's stammering. you caught him.
Right now, okay. I've been listening to audiobooks for like 3 months now. I'm on the seventh one, so I'm almost done.
Nice.
But I'm in a very Harry Potter kind of mood. So watching the movie, she was just like taking such risks and like going against the Kakamora and then jumping into the realm of monsters. And I was like, that's just such a Gryffindor thing to do. Like just taking stupid risks, just like Harry used to do. and then I was like, well, if she's a Gryffindor, then Maui is a Slytherin, clearly. Just like...
Oh, yeah.
And then I started...
Okay.
I started sorting, like, every Disney character ever. I was like, no, stop. Concentrate on the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm sure you have others. Who else have you sorted?
Well, I stopped myself, as I said, but I feel Anna from Frozen is a Hufflepuff. She's just clumsy, but, like, good-hearted, and, you know. And I don't know. Like, most of the villains, I guess, are Slytherins. Well, Scar is obviously a Slytherin, for example. But I was thinking, I can't think of a clear Ravenclaw, I think. Well, Belle.
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
She would be
such a Ravenclaw. But yeah, just if we go down this road, I will talk for hours and hours.
All right.
If you have any sortings, just send them to me on Twitter or comment on this when Chelsea posts the podcast. We can discuss it for hours and hours.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I really liked the small cast though, because you said handful of characters, but you were really able to focus on these two, and especially the pair. And Moana, like, just commenting on her design, she is my favorite princess design. Or I know she's not technically, but she's a Disney princess, and that's what counts. But she looks like she's capable of everything that she does in that thing. It doesn't look like she's going to get snapped in half. And she doesn't bother putting on high heels throughout the movie. So I really love seeing her movement. When she was diving, like Pablo said, when she dove off to catch up to Maui, you see this, like, shooting, like, she's like an eagle off that cliff. And she hits the water, and then the water helps her get to him. But... that is fantastic. And Maui, the rock, is just playing the rock. I have to expect they didn't even animate him. They just put they superimposed the rock inside. They wear this weird wig and you're just gonna be yourself.
They really did.
And I'm okay with that.
And I am definitely okay with that. Again, put him in the vault.
I cannot comprehend how he's so charismatic. Like, he just speaks and I'm like, I like you so much.
Well, you just read the Harry Potter books, Black Magic, obviously.
I think so. That's the only answer.
Oh my gosh. I had the opportunity to interview Darren Butters, who was one of the animators on Moana. He did a lot of work for Maui. He said most of the shots that he did were Maui. And he was just like, I have never seen or met a guy who all at the same time can be so incredibly arrogant and yet so likable.
Just makes no sense.
I see that with The Rock.
I love reading about your welcome, and Lin-Manuel was just like, what would be really funny to hear Dwayne Johnson singing? You're welcome. And you just hear that and you're like, yeah, The Rock would sing that and he would be arrogant and you would still like him. And it just works somehow.
He practically says it every time he enters a room. You're welcome. Or takes off his shirt. You're welcome.
Yeah. The guy looks like a toy. He's like an action figure. It's insane. Makes no sense.
He does. Yeah. He does for sure.
Oh, The Rock.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, but I coming back to the characters, I really liked her parents, that it wasn't just like the mean parents who don't want you to grow. We saw that the dad had a motivation for like wanting to keep everyone on the island. And I really, really like that when Moana is about to run off, she has this moment with her mother when like her mother is okay with it and she helps him and they hug. And that was when I first stirred up during the movie, because it was just such a beautiful moment. Like you think of Mulan when she runs away, her parents are asleep, but this is just like her mom was okay with it. She was like, I don't want you, but you have to do it, so just go. And I was like,
And she packed her that bindle of food like a hobo and sent her on her way.
So many tears.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like the home crew were good.
Yep.
So as far as like the story with, as I mentioned before, the main antagonist really before was going to be the demigod. What was her name again? Teipo. And really in this version, like they didn't really have an antagonist until the very end.
Yeah.
I was talking about that with some friends too. It's kind of like, I'm sad. I miss the Disney villains. Like
I do too.
You think of Jafar and Scar and Cruella de Vil, like they were all so good.
And the villains that are like right from the beginning. You know, I know this is the guy to watch out for, you know?
Yeah. I like that they've been trying to do different things. Like, what's her name? Mother Gothel in Tangled, like, is a great villain.
Mm-hmm.
King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph is a fun villain. But then after that, I just nothing. Like, Frozen has hands, but we don't even learn he's a villain until, like, the third act. And then this one, I actually felt we don't even have a villain, really, because we only see, like, I heard so much about the lava monster, and I was like, ooh, that's going to be... But then it's, like, two short scenes, and it's just,
it's
like...
It's a very short scene.
Yeah. It's basically an obstacle, not even a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I miss Disney villains. When we were playing Catch and Fire at the beginning and Ryan was like heroes, I was like villains.
Is there anywhere you could hang up on Ryan? Because that guy's already doing bad.
Not at all.
I will have to agree with Pablo because there is no villain, I would say. And that's a hard no villain. Yeah. Maui,
hard story to tell.
Yeah, Maui is the closest thing to a villain, I feel, but he's misunderstood. And I get the device of using Tafiti, Maui stealing her heart. And I actually really love that metaphor because, like, Tafiti, this goddess, very fertile, very beautiful, and she becomes an island. I think that's a fantastic scene. And then you don't, it's a big reveal at the end that Taka is Tafiti without her heart. And, like, the fact that she's lava, the lava actually creates the islands, is a thing that actually adds more surface area to the islands. And I really adored that. And it did become an obstacle. And I think that's a perfect term for it, Pablo, because it was a chance for Moana to stand up and show, like, I know who I am. And I therefore know who you are because we're connected. You're the island, you're the land, and you need this part that connects you to the earth. And then she puts in the thing, which that one shot where that is that medium shot. And it's slow motion and she's walking towards Taka and it's like coming towards her, which looks pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I adored that. But yeah, no villain, just a test.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your normal journey film. So you always have to have a buddy in there. Yeah. So the personality conflicts between the two buddies, that's always going to be something to, you know, the main goal is, I guess the villain is the goal, you know? So in this case, there's no real antagonist. And I'm like, miss those.
I love the movie. I really do. But yeah, I would have loved, like, I just want another Disney villain to, like, love and hate at the same time.
Ursula. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Just your voice.
I do. And Hades. Oh.
Yeah, what... Was he, like, the last great Disney villain? Like, after that?
He kind of was.
Yeah, I think so. Because after that, there's nothing that stands out, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. There really isn't. And he doesn't... I'm trying to think. He doesn't sing, but he does have a if there's one thing you don't want to get steamed up, it's Hades. He had an evil plan. He ran the underworld.
I missed that. Like, I want the villain like that.
It's really hard to do that. I too miss the classic Disney villain, but I think it's really hard. Entertainment does often run in trends. And when you want somebody that like Scar is completely unlikable from scene one, you know that guy's bad news. His name is Scar, which either he got named Scar at some point in his life because of the thing, or they assumed he was going to be terrible his entire life.
He just looks different than him. He's like orange and black with the green eyes. You're like, yep, that guy's bad.
Yeah, but you can't as, and like I say heroes, because I find very often I can identify with them. I think Ursula has a wonderful song in The Little Mermaid, but I do not like her. She's a meanie. And, there are people that like the likable, the grumpy lovers out there that can appreciate them. But Mother Gothel is a really good example where she has a reason. She does. There is love between her and, I forgot her name, Tangled. Now I'm the one.
Just call her Tangled.
Miss Tangled. Miss Tangled.
She has
Rapunzel. Rapunzel. Oh my gosh. Kids, just saying, your brain starts to go first. Okay. But yeah, she had genuine feelings towards her, and she did treat her like a daughter, even though it was very a bit abusive. But yeah, I appreciate
so
that.
So manipulative.
There's a better word.
I was thinking a couple of years ago when we did the villain vignettes, and I think I wrote about Mother Gothel, and it was just like, I love how manipulative she is. And then I was like, I can't really write about like the last five movies or so. There's no one there to like write about, which is sad, because the Disney villains are just such a staple of my life. So yeah, that's one of the few things that I wasn't super happy about. I also had some problems. We were doing the Disney canon countdown, right? So we reviewed every Disney animated movie ever. And I had to write in the last couple of weeks about Wreck-It Ralph and Zootopia, which I love both. And I rewatched them, and I'm always impressed by, like, those scripts are just so tight. Like, every little detail is there for a reason. Everything is set up. Everything is paid off. I remember watching Wreck-It Ralph, and I was like, oh, Diet Cola Mountain with Mentos. What a fun throwaway gag. And then it turns, like, into a vital point in the ending, and it's just full of all these little, like, circles that open and close. And I thought Moana had none of that. Like, the Kakamora show up, and they disappear for the rest of the movie. You go into the realm of monsters, and that's one scene, and then that's gone. Even with like the mini Maui tattoo, which we haven't talked about, he was great. When he's keeping score with Moana and Maui, and that kind of drops out too. Even the pig. Like, you're like, this is adorable. I'm so happy I'm going to see this for the rest. Oh, he's gone. I guess we won't be seeing him. So I thought that was a little weak and could have been better, just because I know they can do it from Zootopia and Wreck-It Ralph, where everything was just set up. And so I thought that was like, oh, it's just missing something. Like, I don't know what you guys thought.
I have very similar feelings to you, that you do we're coming off these amazing scripts like Zootopia, although I could have done without that dance scene at the end, but
Shakira, please, come on.
She's part of my childhood too, but what I like about Moana is that it is a very simple, narratively driven plot, and when you're allowed to focus on something so small, get the Rock, and I don't mean Dwayne Johnson, get the Rock back to the island, and then you're done. It really lets you to have some world building. So like the Kakamora, which I hear is a scene that's based off of Mad Max with the Luftwaffe or whatever,
even the soundtrack sounds really similar to the Mad Max soundtrack.
Yeah. But, and like the Realm of Monsters, which it, just, they are throwaway scenes. You could almost omit them and the movie is the same, which is a really bad telling of screenwriting. And I think what Clements and Musker did with this was play it safe with what they this movie. This is the negative thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to drown everybody in positivity eventually.
Yep,
but
this
movie was very derivative of all their other works. Apart from having this Polynesian princess, there was nothing new added to the Disney canon. My point, like Paulo brings up the tattoos. I thought those were so reminiscent of the vases in Hercules, how they use that same dynamic of the 2D animation to like talk about narrative stuff and like kind of show lessons. You have this hero's journey. You have by the numbers script writing, I felt. But that's good. I think that can be, everything has its place because everybody wants their own hero story. And it's good that we are able to play in this Polynesian culture. And with these, it's just reskinned. It seems like it's reskinned. And she's more equivalent to Aladdin, I would say, than any other Disney character, where she's going through it. And they have the dynamic of the genie and Aladdin.
Yeah.
Or even Phil and Hercules, because that's pretty similar in itself. And when, after I got out of it, I was like, man, they just took up, it was a, what's that called? I'm thinking Kids Bop, but that's not what it is. Kids Ask Your Parents. Greatest Hits. It seemed like a greatest hits of everything they have achieved before this. And I know that sounds negative, but that's the last thing. Promise.
Yeah, like, I was a bit worried because, it's very easy to make me cry, as we've established, and I'm sure anyone that has heard my appearance in the podcast about App knows. But I was a bit worried because I had teared up a couple of times, but I hadn't like fully cried, and like the climax happened and Tafiti was restored, and I was like, I haven't cried. Like, I'm very worried. This is very worrying. And then Moana's like, you should come with us. We need a master wayfinder. And he's like, they already have one. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. And then he gets the Moana tattoo. And I was like, oh, no. I started crying. And then everything that happened after that just made me cry so bad. Like,
yeah.
she comes back and she leaves the shell on top of the rocks. And like, she teaches her parents to like wayfind. And then the manta ray shows up. And I was just like bawling, just like tears and the heaves. I was like... And my friend next to me was just the same, and it ended, and everyone was just leaving, and we were just crying during the credits. It was so bad, and I was like, I'm so happy. This is what I come for in Disney movies.
This is why I'm here.
Yes. Yeah.
That tattoo thing, when the only thing on Maui's body that doesn't have to do with himself is this girl who, like, weaseled herself in his life.
Oh, and I didn't even realize that.
And it's beautiful. I love stuff like that because now he's like, forever. That's one of like in the lyrics, dude, don't cry because you're gonna, like, even just thinking is me crying. I totally reflect on people's emotions, and like, you, it's literally so close. I have tears right now just thinking about him crying. And
you guys are awesome.
I messed it up because I didn't just think of that, but that's such a fantastic thing. That, and then back to that, putting the shell where she made it her own. She's going to make her chieftainship or whatever you call it.
It's her own tradition. Her own.
Yeah, she put that up on top of the thing. And it's like that, she's the beautiful. And even though that song, it's like shiny. It doesn't matter what's on the inside. Your grandma lied. It's best to be shiny.
That's so good. I love it. I'm going to cry again tomorrow when I see it, I'm sure.
That's what the beard's for, to soak up all the tears, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we've gone through basically everything. Is there any last-minute things that anybody wants to say? Last things we didn't cover?
I guess we didn't talk about inner workings. That was fun.
Oh, yeah. That was a really good... When the little heart was pulling on the heartstrings and then the brain took it away and then he gave it back at the end.
That was a good...
That's
adorable. I thought it was a lot of fun, but I do think it's kind of forgettable. Like, I forgot about it.
Yeah, I forgot about it too until you just said it.
I also like how they broke the rule of threes, though, and I thought that was impressive. Like, very much in line with what you're thinking. It is forgettable, but I appreciated they broke that rule of threes with the priest saying, whatever, seeing Latin every time he dies, and then they gave it new meaning when he came through, and then like he was walking into his own grave and he wasted his life.
Yeah,
and
his job. Was really good.
And I was like, oh, that is fantastic. And then you see him get the cute redhead at the beach, and that's like, I appreciated that.
Yeah. Oh, also, as long as it ends with getting the cute redhead, you're good.
Yeah. One little thing. I am constantly amazed by what animation can communicate, even to younger minds. Because speaking about Up, a very formative memory when watching it was a child sitting next to me or near me, I can't recall, when they have that opening sequence, young kid, four years old or something, I hear her say, "Mom, she can't have babies, huh?" And I'm like, they never even said that. And that is such an amazing, like, that. I know that kid was probably smart, but that fact that they could communicate impressive. That. And even though what I'm about to say is not that, a very similar effect, when the Kakamora trank Maui, and then you got to feel the tide, and he pees or whatever, and she's like, "Hey, it's warm now." Every kid in that place busted up, and I'm like, how do they know that? They're young kids, and he never said he peed. That's just the warm water, and it communicates to that part that like joins us all, that unknowing language, and I so appreciate that.
And it's even better when it's that, because I've always loved that. When I was studying screenwriting, my teachers were always like, give the audience what they need. Like, just tell them 2 and 2 and let them add it and say like 4. Don't say like 2 and 2 or it's 4, because that little moment where you figure something out that isn't explicit, you're like, oh, like just that audience participation, it makes the movie so much better. So like engaging with the movie. And it's impressive that even little kids like just can figure things out so quickly, and it's just so much fun. So what can I say except you're welcome, for the islands I pull from the sea. There's no need to pray, it's okay. You're welcome. Ha! I guess it's just my way of being me. You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, come to think of it.
Hello, Rotoscopers. This is Alex calling in to give my review of Moana. I just saw it this morning and I really enjoyed it. This has been my favorite Disney film of the revival era so far. I liked it even better than Finding Dory earlier this year. John Musker and Ron Clements have shown that they are masters at creating engaging and entertaining stories, and I felt that this came full circle in Moana. My favorite aspect of the movie was probably the soundtrack. I didn't necessarily think that it ranked among Disney's best, but it was very entertaining, and the songs moved the plot along quickly. I did notice there were 2 or 3 Easter eggs referencing previous Disney films. For example, when Maui gets his hook back for the first time, he turns into Sven from Frozen for a brief second. And at the very end of the end credits, across from the MPAA certification, you can see a wood carving of Ralph from Wreck-It Ralph. I think that's everything. I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend it to any Disney fan. And keep up the good work. Bye.
Thanks, Alex.
Very well said, Alex.
Yeah. And the after credit scene also references Sebastian from The Little Mermaid.
And did you see Baymax in the Kakamoras? Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
What? Yeah, I didn't.
No, Baymax was there?
There's a little coconut with Baymax's face painted on him.
Oh, I missed that. I'm going to look for that tomorrow.
Very nice. All right, this one is from Jack.
Hey, Roscopers. This is Jack calling from Atlanta, and I'm just giving my quick thoughts on Moana, which I just finally saw. And I got to say, it's what everyone's been saying. You have a great cast of characters. You got stunning, beautiful animation, the water, the sand, the skin, everything looks great. And then you have the memorable music by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Just, it's growing on me every second now. And the one thing that really got me curious about Moana was whether directors Ron and John would give us a new great villain. This new, like, second renaissance Disney has been having has been lacking on great villains for me. So I was wondering if they were going to bring us something as classic as Ursula, Radigan, Hades, John Silver, Dr. Facilier. And I'm kind of glad they didn't go with a main villain. So I found that really refreshing. They used a more mythical route where the character would have to overcome obstacles like the Odyssey. So that was really refreshing in my mind. But the one thing I didn't get was the coconut people. They just came out of nowhere, not really foreshadowed or mentioned after they are seen. So I didn't know what they really were. I'm not sure they were mythical monsters they would have to fight, or they were actual people, or who sent them. I was kind of confused, but after a while, I'm just thinking maybe Ron and John just wanted a Mad Max sequence, and it would just be pretty cool. And it was cool. But overall, I think I'd probably get 4.5, maybe a 5 after I watch it again. So, yeah.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah, that was a great summary of what we said, too.
It really was, yeah. I did think that I liked his comment on why the Kakamora, that's what they're called, right?
Kakamora, yeah.
Kakamora, how they just kind of like came and went. And I kind of felt like all of the challenges came and went.
Yeah.
So it was more of an Odyssey feel. So
Something I didn't mention that I love Maui and I love Moana, but I felt the relationship wasn't as strong as, say, Nick and Judy from Zootopia or Ralph and Vanellope from Wreck-It Ralph. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we didn't see them, like, be friends and have adventures together, except for one scene, really. Like, they're at odds with each other. Then Moana gives her speech to Maui. He can transform into the animals he wants. Then we get a montage with a fantastic song where, like, he's teaching her to wayfind and everything. And then right after that, it's the first battle with the lava monster, and then Maui's gone. And you're like, but I haven't seen them be friends to be, like, more emotionally affected by everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was another issue, but I still love them both.
It's like, these are all just like super nitpicky things.
Yeah, exactly.
But, hey,
we need to find something.
Yeah,
I
totally
about.
Get that. We have to find something to talk about here. All right, our next one is from Jess A.
Hello, Rotoscopers. It's Jess here, sending you my thoughts on Moana. For the first third of the film, I was engrossed. The music, the island, the characters, and the potential. Ugh, all that potential. From the moment she got onto the boat for the second time and sailed past the reef, I began to lose some of my enthusiasm. The music was still great, as were the personalities. However, everything from that point became predictable. From the second I saw the swirl symbol on the lava creature, I'd immediately thought, oh, is that all? That's the island or goddess, and she turned into this because she was angry, the heart was gone. Is that it? To be honest, I don't know what I was expecting. Put it plainly, it was no big revelation, which isn't necessarily an issue. It was just underwhelming, and I left the theatre feeling really underwhelmed. On my first viewing, I'll give this a 3.5 out of 5. Perhaps a second viewing, when it comes out on Blu-ray, will help raise that score. I'm hoping it was just, you know, I was sitting way too close to the screen, and 3D wasn't the best aspect or view. I'm hoping when it comes out, I'll have a better idea of it and be able to raise that score a bit more. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Very well spoken.
Let's take a moment to appreciate her accent, please.
Oh, yeah. To my very American ears, even Pablo, like, to my very California ears, like, even Pablo was like, what a romantic voice. And I remember, like, so those things, what would you guess? New Zealand or Australia?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I couldn't hear
either
super
way,
well. I mean,
either way, it's so beautiful.
I don't know.
Jess A, yeah. Was it? Fantastic. Yeah. You just got a voice compliment.
Thank you.
I thought, like, this... taking that, it's so amazing to see how many people from all over the world are connected with Rotoscopers.
Yeah.
So for example, Pablo, where are you calling from right now?
Well, I'm in Vancouver right now, which is where I'm going to school. But, you know, I'm from Colombia, so here's a Colombian in Canada recording this podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've got people from all over the world that tune in, and I think it's so amazing. So thank you for anybody. If you are from outside of the U.S. or even whatever part you are, if you listen to this, go to the website, rotoscopers.com/136. And make a comment and tell us where you are calling from or where you are listening from. Because I would love to see where everybody is at. That's one of the best parts about this. Whether you're in the United States or wherever part of the world you're in, I would love to hear that. So, all right. The next one is going to be from Mark.
Our boy Mark.
Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. It's Mark from Orlando. How are you guys doing? I know it's been a long time since I've called. So I'm just calling, basically I just want to say congratulations to Morgan on her new baby. And the question I have is regarding something along those lines, but any one of you three can answer it. My question is, when you guys get a family of your own, if you ever get a family of your own, you can get kids, what animated films would you show them at what ages? Like, for example, which would be the animated films that you'd show them from the beginning, and like, which would you wait until, you know, maybe they're older, like 7 or 8 to see, or maybe until they're like in their teens to see, or how exactly would you space them out? So just wondering what you guys would say about that. Thanks. Bye.
That's a good question. So I'll start off by saying, I think I would start at the beginning with some of them. I don't know. Snow White is kind of hard. I just remember Snow White for me was hard to get into when I was young. Mm-hmm. Cinderella probably would be the first one that I would show my daughter or son, probably. Who knows? I think that would be probably one of the first ones. And then, there's just so many. What would be the first animated film that you would show your kid?
I would, you know, that is a very personal question. I feel but first off, thank you, Mark. This is a very good question. I think from a historical point of view, I would want to have them watch everything so they can experience everything. But I think I would probably do something more recent because the movies do follow the trends. They do have color mapping, color scheming now that like really engage people. So, I mean, I would, whatever is popular at the time, and then we'd probably work our way back. And I would force them to watch everything later on.
You have no choice. There, congratulations.
There is some stuff I'd skip, but yeah, most everything.
Yeah. Next one. It looks like Pablo's computer just died.
Oh,
so
Pablo.
I'm not sure if he'll be joining us again. But we will move on to our next one. And this is from Sydney.
Hey, Rotoscopers. My name is Sydney. I'm a longtime listener, but this is actually my first time calling. I actually started listening about a year ago.
Oh, no. That's right. Sydney's call got called off. Got cut off.
She joined Sydney. Pablo in the great beyond.
No. Call back, Sydney. Call back. We want to hear from you.
Sydney, we need to hold a eulogy now. People are dropping left and right.
They're dropping like flies. Can't even take it anymore. Oh, man. All right. Well, cool. Sydney, I hope you're back. Thank you for everybody else who has come in and sent us your voicemails. Glad we were able to. I'm super glad I was able to get that working.
Yay.
Everybody say yay. So this has been such a fun episode. Ryan,
yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I want to find out, what do you rate this movie?
I said, the negative is it is very derivative, but I feel like it's just like sports. It's the same game. Whether it's the football, Americano, or anything, the World Series, you just want your team to go to the Super Bowl or what have you.
True.
And when something like this comes along that is so representative of a culture, I adore it. It's not perfect. I but I adore it. And so I really struggled with this, and I think I'm going to give it a flat four stars out of five.
Four. All right.
Or curvaceous four, because Moana is very curvaceous. Sorry.
So almost a 4.5, yeah. Not quite. Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to go... The number four pops into my head, honestly, as far as what this movie goes. But I want to give it a 4.5.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because it's been a little bit of time since I've seen it. Because in order to do that interview with Darren Butters, they made me go to one of the early previews. It was actually before the New York screening. It was before anybody else saw it.
You poor thing.
I know. So it was like a month ago that I saw it originally, and I just so like right now it's coming off as like a four, but at the same time I'm like, I think if I saw it again, I would end up giving it a 4.5. So I'm just gonna go for the 4.5 just because I think that I should. And if I decide to change my mind later, hey, I don't
yeah,
I'll just do that.
It's not written in stone.
It's like, whose line is it anyway? The points really don't matter.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case, hey, Pablo really gave it a 6 out of 5. He adored the movie. That's I don't know. But honestly, if I may say one thing, I feel like I found a kindred spirit in Pablo. We're cry buddies now.
I just got a message from Pablo. I asked him what his actual rating was, and he says, 4.5 out of 5, absolutely loved the music, but that element of things just happening and never coming back is my number one complaint. Yeah. I have, but a great addition to the Disney family and one I'll watch countless times.
Well said. And I love you, bro. I greatly admire his writing. He's always one to get a conversation going on the Rotoscoper site. And to echo your thoughts, I adore the Rotoscoper's website because it is such a... In my personal life, I cannot talk about animation. I have to talk about grown-up stuff, which is boring and lame. Kids, don't grow up. But in this community that you guys... Because Chelsea, Mason, and Morgan have created something so special where people get to come together and chat about things that like really have no ethereal importance, but we get to talk about villains. Pablo will light the internet on fire with one of his opinion pieces, and we can all like pile in on him and tell him how wrong he is. And I so appreciate that. And so, and Chelsea, I thank you in the email, but thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been a lot of fun, and I've adored the Rotoscopers all the way since episode 19. And so,
oh man, really? That's when you joined us? 19?
Paranorman. I googled Paranorman it was in iTunes, and I put in Paranorman, and then there you guys were, and it was just an off thing, and I tried it, and then I fell in love with Chelsea, Mason, and Morgan, and like we've seen them. I granted you don't know this because it's very one sided, but I got to see you go. Very recently you went to the Olympics. You went to all that stuff, which is amazing. Morgan has a baby now. That's crazy.
I know. I don't even think neither of them were married at that point.
No, they weren't. They were. Yeah. Mason was doing. I mean, he's working now, but he was going through the. ASU,
BYU,
right? BYU, and then it's like, what? Back in the day where they never laughed at your jokes, I was there. There were so many. Are they doing this on purpose? And I think there was
no. They still don't laugh at my jokes. Nobody laughs at my jokes.
You're hilarious, by the way. But there's. I think there was a. They might have said it, whatever. But you said something hilarious, and I'm laughing. And then they're like, "Oh, sorry, we were muted. I was at the same time, guys. At the same time."
No, they weren't even. Yeah, they were. Okay, this is on one of the best of episodes I put in there. I think it was 2014, best of. Maybe it was 2015. No, 2014. Yeah, that was basically. I was telling a story about my bearskin rug.
Yeah.
And both of them put their thing on mute for a moment because they both had to do an errand. This is before we were doing the video podcast. And so sometimes we didn't really ever see. It was all audio. So we never really saw what anybody else was doing. We were just kind of talking and for me, hoping that they're listening. And I like say this thing and I hit the punchline and I'm like,
crickets.
Why aren't I funny?
Crickets.
Like, I'm done. I'm done.
So why not be shining? Watch me dazzle like a diamond in the rough. Strut my stuff is so shiny. Hats in your armies, but they'll never be enough. Shells are tough, Maui man. You could try.
Thank you. Now, this has been an amazing episode. So much fun. I'm so glad that we were all able to be. It's just had a great rhythm, great fun. And I hope that all of you are able to do what I said, go to the website and tell me where you're from and maybe when you started listening to us or, you know, just let's get all conversational. Yay. Anyway, if you have any questions as far as like, once again, that goes to rotoscopers.com/136. And then you'll also be able to, if you're going to be, you know, if you can tweet at me also, my Twitter is Chelsea Robson. And you can do the hashtag AnimAddicts136, and you can tell me whatever you want. You can also do that. Ryan, do you have a Twitter?
Unfortunately, I don't. But if I were to start a, I want people to one go to the website because
okay.
I love talking.
Go to the
people.
Website, and then also Pablo also has a Twitter too. You can find him. I'd have to look that up. That will also be on the website. But definitely let us know any of the questions that you have, anything, voicemails. You can get us, you can either go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can actually call us using the phone number 406-646-6575. And you guys, this has just been such an awesome, awesome time. If you happen to be listening to us on iTunes, head on over and give us a feedback review. You probably don't realize this, but this really does help. And we've been able to be, you know, showcased on it because of the reviews that we've gotten from you guys. So thank you so much for those. Morgan Stradling, you can find her on Twitter. Let her know you missed her. Also Mason, you can find him on his Instagram. He no longer has a Twitter. Wah, wah. Or you can just go to his blog at thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com. All right. Well, here is that time. We are ending it off right now. Stay on here because we will be choosing a title right after this. But I hope you guys know that we love you and we're glad to have you. Until next time. And now, Ryan, you can join in me with saying this.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
We are the Rotoscopers, okay? Okay. We'll all say this. Okay. Until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers. Oh, it feels so good to say that.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, we talked a lot about him.
Hashtag put Miranda in the vault. We need to preserve that guy.
Put Miranda in the vault.
That needs to trend. One. We can't let him escape. He can't go back to theater. He needs to create for us.
Hashtag put Miranda in the vault. All right. Anybody, if you're going to be on Twitter or anything, get that to trend. Would not let me even log on. I was really ticked, actually.
That's a strong word. So, that's the 10 on the Chelsea scale.
Well,
I never.
Oh, my God.